Episode 31 of Consistently Above Average is here. Saturday the 19th of April. Episode 31, of course, has a very nice ring to it. 91 is a great prime number, has to be said. 31 also the date of my birthday. You'll only find that date in January, March, May, July, August, October and December. California, of course, the 31st state to join the United States of America. And last but not least, 31 is a slang phrase in Turkey for masturbation, apparently. That's what the internet tells me. Now you know it as well. Let's cut straight to the chase. All right, it's a huge weekend. Huge weekend for people with very strong beliefs, very strong faith. There's no point in denying it. Regardless of what your own personal opinions are, of which there are so many conflicting ones when it comes to this topic in this day and age, you just can't ignore it. All right, it's very clear, very straightforward. This Sunday is a very important day for many people around the world. And I think it's ignorant, to be honest. It's repugnant, it's disgusting if you don't give people the chance to express their faith in something. Tomorrow is 420. It's Sunday, 420. If they want to get stoned all day eating Easter eggs because Easter Sunday happens to fall on 420, then you have to let them. It's the National Stoners Holiday, 420. This is a phrase that became invented in the 1980s by a group of kids who are trying to find a secret stash of pot somewhere, and their meeting time was 420. And they tried to make it like a police code, like a homicide, like a 187 or something like that. 420 was the code. So that's how that came. It's a stoner's paradise. It's the only day that they don't have that little bit of self-loathing and hatred inside them for sparking up very early in the morning. So if you celebrate it, the biggest danger to you, let's be clear here, the biggest danger is what's in your press. It's what's in the press. It's what's in the cupboard. If you're going to be going down that road tomorrow, make sure you're well prepared. Have a can or two of Pepsi Max chilling in the fridge. Have it for me. Have it in my honour. If you're going to be enjoying it while listening to this podcast as well on a Sunday of all days, then even better. Hope it's a good one for you. You thought I was going to talk about Easter. See the way I did that? That was good, wasn't it? They thought I was going to talk about religion or Easter, Holy Sunday, whatever. But that's the curveballs you come to expect from these podcasts. Don't go mad in them secondary recording clips, by the way. Video users, you're very welcome. We have a producer in studio here with us this evening who's recording some secret extra clips for social. Keep an eye on our Instagram and our YouTube channel for that. Let's talk about other things that are going on this weekend. Very important this weekend. The obvious choice, number one choice, WrestleMania. WrestleMania is in Las Vegas. It's taken over Las Vegas. It's a weekend affair. SmackDown was on Friday night. WrestleMania in the, is it Allegiant? Allegiant. It's a huge big NFL stadium in Las Vegas. Walked past it in December. It is a behemoth. It's going to be on Saturday and Sunday night and then Raw on Monday in the T-Mobile Arena. WrestleMania, admittedly, something I have always wanted to go to. Really and truly, always wanted to go to a WrestleMania. Fingers crossed, one day I will be able to go. WWE, now owned by a conglomerate, also in business with the UFC. They are the TKO Group. They are going into boxing this year as well. And as revealed most recently in the last couple of months by Dana White, the UFC are going to be investing a lot more money into the sport of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu over the next 12 months. So, how can all of this be relevant? Why is wrestling relevant to any of this? Well, last night on Flow Grappling, there was an event called WNO, Who's Number One, which you may have seen a couple of people compete at through Instagram and stuff like that. Potentially for the last time, depending on upcoming signatures and people signing with Fight Pass Invitational, you may have seen them on WNO for the last time. But the Fight Pass Invitational, if I can use a phrase from the MMA world, it is essentially a turnkey type product. What I mean by turnkey is that the UFC have their own arena, they have the Apex, they have their own full-time staff, they own all the equipment, and they have the name and they have the brand. So if somebody wanted to come in and take the media rights for something like that in the future, this is turnkey. They don't have to worry about the production, they don't have to worry about the venue, the staff, all of those things. The UFC are delivering you a ready-made product. There is a growing community of mixed martial arts and the jiu-jitsu scene in Las Vegas that is getting bigger and bigger, to be honest. It's a very easy place to get to anywhere from the United States. There are flights all over America going to Vegas quite regularly. And it is, in my opinion, inevitable that the UFC for no-gi grappling is going to become the dominant location, the hub, the premier spot for people to be competing in the next 5 years. I believe it's already done. You can trust me on that one. It's going to be the industry leader within the next couple of years. This is where you will be treated like a professional. Not that other promotions don't do stuff like that, but it's where the UFC are able to afford stuff like that for the longer term potential benefit in the form of like a monthly recurring subscription to UFC Fight Pass that you can just leave running in your bank account. People won't have an issue with a smaller fee every month. People have had documented cases and issues with Flow Grappling and their subscriptions and secret charges. And there's been court cases against Flow Sports as well over stuff like that. So the UFC will just kind of, people are happy to let it run. They also get other things out of having a Fight Pass account too. If we talk about Fight Pass Invitational and how it can be benefited for the UFC, it's also where the press conferences are attended by people who actually cover the sport of MMA for a living, where there is a crossover of sorts. A lot of these journalists are now living in Las Vegas due to the influx of Apex shows over the last couple of years. So in order to be a viable entity to organization that are willing to pay you a salary, you really need to be based in Las Vegas. Otherwise, they're not going to be spending money on flights and accommodation for you to come back and forth for random Apex events, but they could justify a salary if you're already living in Las Vegas, which is what a lot of them are now doing. They then cover the Apex shows, and they will cover the Fight Pass Invitational shows, not because the UFC are asking them, but maybe the UFC will have a press conference with Dana White, which is worth something to those organizations and entities. They may have press conferences and interviews with fighters who are going to be on future main events, which is, again, worth something to those entities. Interviewing the random jiu-jitsu person after the one at the Fight Pass Invitational, not high on the list of priorities for MMA Junkie, for example, but if MMA Junkie have someone based in Las Vegas who can go to that because they're going to get an interview with a main event of an event, UFC event that's happening 4 weeks later, then they'll go and cover the event from that perspective. The jiu-jitsu athletes that are going to be competing on these events are also going to be on a real stage, real production, a real Diaz, it would be known as. They're not going to be hosted by a fella who's wearing an unironed t-shirt and a blazer over the top of it, sitting back like this, asking questions, being like, oh, so sorry, I thought I had a microphone in my hand there. How are you going to submit this guy? Great, thanks. For me, this is where the transformation is going to come from. When you talk about going from a minor league to a major league, and also more importantly, where elements of professional wrestling or mixed martial arts are going to come into play and be very important for jiu-jitsu. Because over the last while, through the introduction of these press conferences and slagging for jiu-jitsu tournaments and jiu-jitsu events, like, they just need to get a little bit better at that. They are not used to being interviewed. They are not used to giving answers. They are not used to talking in front of wider crowds or media as stuff. Considering the level of skill that they have as athletes, they have virtually no exposure in that side of things when it comes to other stuff like that. So UFC would be a benefit for that. There were rumors as well a couple of years ago that ADCC was on the verge of going with the UFC Fight Pass, moving away from Flow Grappling at the time. And then depending on what you read on what Reddit thread, something happened at the final hour that made ADCC go back to Flow Grappling for that particular year. I believe it's something that's going to happen in the next couple of events. ADCC will transition to Fight Pass. Flow Grappling will essentially be out. This is a huge global entity who, from the UFC's perspective, like, again, not to get into the nitty gritty of mixed martial arts, media rights and development, the UFC are going into possibly one of the biggest media rights renegotiation periods in history. All right. Their deal with ESPN in the US is finishing up. And 2 days ago, their exclusive negotiation period has lapsed. This means that other entities, potentially someone like Netflix, Amazon, whoever, can now enter the bidding war and discuss with the UFC about their product. A relationship has already been established between Netflix and the UFC and the WWE and TKO when they signed a $5 billion deal. $5 billion for 10 years of a partnership. This is to show WWE Raw live every Monday night and a pay-per-view every month. So all the pay-per-views, all the Raws are now available on Netflix. Now, what could this have to do with jiu-jitsu? As I alluded to, if you haven't noticed really in the last couple of years or so, Brazilian jiu-jitsu is essentially professional wrestling. Mixed martial arts is essentially professional wrestling. Yes, the same way boxing is as well. The results are not predetermined. That's the only difference. However, I suppose the results aren't predetermined, but last weekend at the IBJJF in Dublin, we did see two athletes disqualified for allegedly faking a match. But storylines and conflict is what sells. People creating a brand and a reputation is what sells. A good guy against a bad guy is what sells. A guy who betrayed a friend is what sells. We've seen this story countless times in mixed martial arts. We've seen it for decades in professional wrestling. And you're going to see that in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu over the next couple of years as well. At the minute, you have athletes trading off in low-quality meme wars with other people, trying to get under the skin of people, trying to either be the face, which is the good guy, or the heel, which is the bad guy. They're doing this not only to draw attention, not only to themselves, but also to their matches, so more people can watch them, so they can use the potential views and figures from these events and engagements to try and get themselves a better deal in future, better sponsorships, better endorsements, and that is a completely understandable thing as far as I'm concerned. Now, what the WWE has been praised for recently is an expression that is called long-term storytelling. And it boils up like a pressure cooker waiting to explode and you get the payoff at the end. The only real example of that in jiu-jitsu at the moment in terms of long-term storytelling would be if Craig Jones and Gordon Ryan were to have a grappling match. Their feuding back and forth has been years in the making with a lot of funny plots and twists along the way. And that is the equivalent of a long-term storytelling to a degree, where a large portion, it would probably be currently the most watched jiu-jitsu match in history if it was done on a platform that was easily accessible for people to be able to watch, where someone wouldn't mind paying the 15 quid or whatever to Fight Pass to be able to watch it. So you have seen and will continue to see more of an emphasis on press conferences, questions, Instagram reels, jiu-jitsu athletes trying to one-up their opponents before they compete against each other. And I really and truly believe, and you'll hear people say this, it doesn't matter anymore if you win ADCC or IBJJF Worlds by and large. It matters how you're able to connect with the audience, make them feel something, who are willing for the most part to exchange money for your goods and services in the future. You have to take into consideration as well how vastly popular this sport is becoming and how many practitioners there are that do it around the world. The very famous Marcelo Garcia Brown Belt Dream Team many, many years ago were often financially helped out by and compensated by training partners with high salaries in New York City. The same way businessmen and companies get behind certain teams in Brazil. The same way in the Middle East you could have people who are being paid to represent a certain team in order to try to get a higher standing on big events and team podiums and stuff like that. There are people willing to put money into this thing in different capacities because they enjoy the sport at some level themselves and they have unimaginable wealth. And I used to think, for myself anyway, I think we spoke about this before, what's the point in doing some sort of Instagram reels and instructionals because Gordon Ryan is releasing them or Guy Mendes has AOJ online and there's stuff online from high level people and you should just be studying that instead. But the reality is, the brown belt high-level competitor who's trying to win Europeans or Pans or Worlds from a smaller gym, they might be chasing those details that these people are giving. But like we mentioned last week, the smaller unknown figures in jiu-jitsu, the accountants in Prague, the police officers in Portugal, the chefs in Stockholm, the waste management consultants in Idaho, the millionaires that have apartments in Martha's Vineyard, they just want to know how to escape side control. They want to know how to tie their belt properly. They want a cool submission from Spider Guard. These people do not care, A from B. They want a question answered and they want to receive that information in a way that resonates with them the most, maybe the quickest way, or from a personality that they like and a person who they like in how they're teaching, explaining, crack, banter, whatever. there is probably a lot of eye rolling going on at this episode. What is he at? Like, how is jiu-jitsu anything like WWE or wrestling or whatever? But in the same way that you have the upper echelon of WWE, you have the smaller shows that happen in venues. You have the smaller shows that happen in halls, the independent wrestlers who will never make it to that big a stage, the exact same way that you have really in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, the people that are doing it, by and large, for the love of the game. In the next few years, like, I'm convinced, like, jiu-jitsu will never really have, like I said, that turnkey example. It will never have a huge exclusive rights deal and stuff like that. That's largely down to the fact that there isn't one unified organization that is signing everyone up and taking control of stuff. But I think that's where the UFC will come into the market massively. If we consider Brazilian jiu-jitsu as three avenues at the moment, there's recreational, there's regional, and then there's international. The international is going to have to go far, far away from what the recreational is in the next few years as they attempt to allow the athletes to make a living from competing. Not having to run schools or do seminars, they could just feasibly live off competition purses, sponsorships, bonuses, whatever. That's if the UFC go in the way that I think that they will go in. Of course, that won't last forever. Your time is very limited. So the seminars and schools are important in the longer term. But recreational is, for the most part, in my experience, is just full of people who are doing the sport. Socially, they get a lot from it. Physically, they get a lot from it. Mentally, they get a lot from it. And I can guarantee if you walk into any gym in the world today or tomorrow or Monday, you're not going to hear the changing room be full of discussion about, oh, what do you think of the Highshaw versus Pun match from this weekend's Who's Number One? Mark, the 43-year-old blue belt electrician who's a father of two, that sentence means nothing to him. Mark has no idea what you're talking about. That sounds just like the brain rot that his kids are learning from TikTok and Instagram reels. He's lost. He doesn't know what WNO is. He's trying to figure out how to stop getting caught in a baseball bat choke from his main training partner. So there is the regional, the national, and the international, and those levels are going to be three different things essentially in the next couple of years. And it's why there's an expression that professional wrestling and mixed martial arts are two sides of the same coin. But we're starting to see from our niche sport that we may have to start thinking some sort of three-sided coin where Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu will have a segment in that as well. Now, you're going to need to think about attention when the camera is on, combined with your attitude, your personality, your outlandish statements that can go viral or become a meme and make people laugh. Who the fuck is that guy type thing that will last forever. They make people want to see you in one way or another. They either want to see you win or they want to pay money to see you lose. That is a million miles away. That's the one thing that we need to get clear on. That is a million miles away of what actually happens and goes on day to day in a gym. This is hyperbole. This is show. This is performance. You really don't need 16-year-old blue belts or stuff like that acting and carrying on like that in a day to day way. They need to be taught, minded, keep an eye on the younger generation so that they realize that there is a performance element of this if you want to try and make a career and a future and a financial freedom from it. But realistically, that's going to be reserved for like a 0.0% of athletes who do the sport. And it will only be breakthrough people who do that. So that's something that people, gym owners and whatever, elder statesmen of the gym should be in mind of as they navigate through the next couple of years with that idea. So we have a couple of questions to finish up with this week's show. Question number one, with the weather as it is, what is your favorite frozen treat for weather like this? Not a big ice cream guy, has to be said, but a homemade 99 out of the Roma in Dundalk is number one. The Roma is literally an institution, cash-only institution, the best type of institutions. It's not whipped, it's not from a machine, like a machine. It's their own stuff and it is absolutely elite. That would be number one. I enjoy anything raspberry and chocolate. Magnum have a nice double raspberry Magnum, chocolate Magnum, which is amazing. They also did a blueberry and cookies Magnum in the last year or two, which I liked a lot. But in terms of a summer thing, I'm going to have to go with the humble Solero. Solero, top tier, in my opinion. Refreshing. If you're abroad at a competition, you're in a good ice cream place, and there's a mango sorbet available, I will be taking that 10 times out of 10, no doubt. Maybe a passion fruit alternative as well. Next question. How many breakfast baps have I had in my life? The answer at this stage, I think I started going in 2018. Within that, COVID did take a dent in it. He was shut for a while. Legally, you weren't allowed to travel out there. Still traveled out there most days. I would say I'm definitely over. I'm going to just ask my producer to nod his head here. Would you say I've eaten over 500 BAPS from Eamon's? 500 comfortably. Under 700. Under 700. Over 700, do you think? Really? 2018, two or three a week. And there's sometimes it's five a week. Conservatively, we'll say we've broken 500. I'll ask Eamon the next time I see him. Do you know how you'll figure it out? Go to his house and see what car he's driving. That's how you'll know how many BAPS I've eaten in the last couple of years. Next question. What would you consider competent when learning a new technique before moving on to something else? Very good question. And while this podcast is slowly turning into an advocation for watching Dara O'Connell's stories when he's going for a walk in Spain, he had one up recently about this and equated it to passing a test in the educational system. If you want to pass a test in school, you only need 40%. That's the passing rate. 40%. 4-0. 40%. Right? But when we're trying to learn a new technique in jiu-jitsu, we'll sometimes put too much pressure on ourselves and trying to apply them in sparring that we think that if we're not doing it 100% right against a fully resisting opponent, then we haven't learned the technique. Whereas in many other avenues of life, 40% is considered a passing grade. So why can't 40% be considered a passing grade for within jiu-jitsu? On the other side of the spectrum, I once had somebody tell me that they will only teach techniques to their class that they are confident of hitting on everybody in the room while giving 100% resistance. Now, that really skewed me in terms of teaching for a while, and I don't think that's 100% right, because like body shape and size, there are certain people in the class that you won't be able to hit techniques on, and that is completely fine. But being able to pull them off live in like positional sparring is one measure, especially if the class is structured in a certain way that gives positional sparring exposure to what you had practiced. Like, we're going to start in this position, we're going to spar, we're going to see what happens and go from there, because you're likely going to get to try it on a variety of different belt ranks, a variety of different shapes and sizes. Within that, you can hopefully see how it's working on lower or same level belts initially. Within that, you can then try to get to these positions in rounds of freer sparring, which can be a whole different issue altogether. So the person who asked this, they are a teacher themselves in a different sort of thing. I know them very well. Think about applying it to your own students and what you teach them. And when you're teaching them something new, you're happy with 40%. You're happy with that at the start for them to get there, and then you build and progress on that. Next question. Does competing as a coach come with more pressure than competing as a student? Now, the answer initially to that is yes. Okay, it has to be yes. But then certain things can happen and come to pass for you to realize that they don't matter as much as you thought they did. I'm going to shout out podcast listener, good lad, Andy Chapman, who recently came back competing after a very serious injury. And he had a great post-op saying that while he would have used to be annoyed at himself if he didn't get a certain result, as he is a coach and stuff like that, 9 months ago he was faced with an entirely different proposition of, will I ever be able to train again? Something like that can really change your perception on what you're getting out of competition and if it matters whether you win or lose, which I think is a great way to look at it. Okay, if you've had a change of situation in your life, it makes you realize, okay, that's going to be something that's different. All right. For me, I had two moments that evaporated it as a kind of a pressure. One was coming back after a tournament as a black belt and losing to somebody very good, like in the sense that I got absolutely rinsed. All right. Clearly rinsed, right? Someone I had given a purple belt to quite recently before that told me that the majority of people that I'm teaching will not compete to that level ever. That they are happy being recreational, they like training twice a week, whatever. They might compete once a year, do a local tournament, do the Irish Open, do whatever. Or they'll rarely compete at all. The fact that they see the coach or the person who's teaching them jiu-jitsu attempting to mix it up at the highest level possible, preparing well, caring about the sport, caring about jiu-jitsu, to these people, that is something that is unreachable for many people to begin with. And they take a lot from that, being proud of the person that's coaching them, going out there and trying to see, does it work, different stuff. Even something as silly as like hitting the sweeps that you've been teaching in classes and then hitting them in tournament is a good reference point for them to see like, oh, well, this stuff works at the highest level. They take a lot from that. The other was 1 year at the Irish Open when a couple of the teenagers who were competing on the same day as me saw me in my gi at the venue warming up, getting ready to compete, and they had no idea that I was competing. And they were asking, oh, are you competing on the same day as us? And then ended up asking their parents if they could stay a little bit longer that day to be able to watch my matches. Now, luckily, for the sake of this feel-good story, I ended up winning the tournament that day, which was good. I don't have any involvement with teaching the teens programs in any of our gyms, but more and more of them have now are breaking through competition and coming into competition classes and training and mixing up with adults classes as well. And I know they're going to be a nightmare for me to train with in the next couple of years, but that was a very nice, heartwarming type moment to kind of see them being like, oh, they're competing as well. And I know that does mean a lot for the competitors in the gym when they feel that the coach or the person at the top or the person who's leading it or pushing it is also willing to do the same thing, put themselves out there to be tested. And it can create like a knock-on effect of people willing to compete, which is great. Third last question. What do you make of people using "no one is registered in my division" as an excuse not to enter the competition? Now, I'm an awful man for a last-minute registration. I do enjoy that, and I know other people do as well. Maybe someone somewhere gets a little bit rattled as they refresh the screen before the registration time closes, and then bang, someone's name pops up, haven't paid for. And you're like, oh no, now they're in the division as well. However, if you are in a division, usually at whatever belt or rank where there may not normally be as many people in it, at the end of the day, if you want to compete, I would say that you have to be the person to get the name down, pay up front early, so that like when it comes down to it, if it's a division like that, you would probably take one match at the end of the day anyway. You'd be happy with that. But if you're not paid and signed up in there early, you have no one really to blame but yourself in that situation, because you didn't show the other person that, here, I'm ready, money down, let's go, you sign up. If you don't sign up from this point on, well then, I was there, I was ready. Worst case scenario, no one signs up, they're going to give you a refund anyway, or you can show up on the day, get your medal and do the absolute. So I would say be the first name down in that case and make them sign up because you have already signed up. Your thoughts on the balance between overanalyzing and taking action in roles. This is something that I've come across again recently in rounds, especially when trying to emphasize the focus on being first in many important positions in jiu-jitsu while preparing for competition. I have a particular training partner who is comfortably one of the best butterfly guard players I've ever come across in jiu-jitsu. Seb, our coach, is brilliant from that position, but this guy has literally downloaded everything that he could from him, and his body type is a little bit different. If he ever took the notion to study an Adam Wardzinski DVD, it would be over for everyone in our gym. I well and truly believe that. I recently had some success dealing with this position with his sweeps by literally trying to switch off the over-analyzation aspect of it, of the position, and just trying to take action. So if there's a position that you're struggling with and you do overanalyze it in training, you find yourself getting bet from there, getting swept from there, submitted from there, then as you're being put into it or you feel that you're going into that position, maybe you've blocked or shut down the first phase of that position, that has to be the time to go. Because the odds in history have shown you that you'll usually get bet from that position anyway. So instead of delaying the inevitable and knowing that it's going to happen, you might as well try something from that position, because you might shock yourself at how well you can put the guard under pressure or the position under pressure, or find a new timing of how to beat it. Figure out what will work, trial and error. I think shelling up and just trying to stop and move away from a certain position will, without offering some sort of offense back in retaliation, will only end up with that person working harder to find a way around it and beating you with the position that they're good at anyway. So try to block out the "I don't want to lose from this position" and adopting the "it's worth risking it here because it's only training" approach. That will often work out better than you think. And finally, one that may become more prominent over the next couple of weeks. Is it just me, or is the Irish Open not as big a deal as it used to be? So in the last couple of months, there must be a setting that you can turn off on Smooth Comp or something like that if you're a competition organizer. The organizers of the Irish Open and other affiliated tournaments that are organized by the same people, they have turned off the setting to show you how many total athletes are registered for the next tournament or were registered for previous tournaments. So when you click onto the athlete list, you don't get the figure in brackets like you would on every other tournament. For example, with Grappling Industries. Now, this was previously available. Let's call a spade here. This was previously available information. As we have done an episode on this podcast talking about the numbers and figures of people that have signed up for tournaments in Ireland over the course of the last few years and the cost of the registrations and how much potential money may have been taken in by X, Y, or Z. So that information was available then. It's not available now. So I will allow you to that. Do you know what? Human error. That's all it was. Human error. Here I am, boop, 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 setting up the new one. Oh, I forgot to click that button to show people how many people are registered. Complete error. No problem. I'm sure it will be rectified in the future. Now, from my perspective, I'll take the shoe off here for dramatic effect for the video, right? I'm waiting for John Luca to call me this, right? What's this? Chief bootlicker, okay? Andrew McGahan, chief bootlicker. In my opinion, there is no bigger tournament in the country than the Irish Open. This is me. Hello, Irish Open's on. You need to do it. Fact, okay? Biggest tournament at the end of the year that you want to say that you've won. Now, I'm saying this, but there's also a very good chance that I'm not even going to be doing it myself this year for different reasons. But if possible, I will be doing it. I've got into the comfy position here in the chair now because you know this is going to be good. We're getting into it here now, right? Winning Grappling Industries Dublin or the Empire Mid-Ulster Open or the Grapple City Connacht Invitational, that does not compare. This is the crown title, the creme de la creme. This is the San Pellegrino, the Saratoga spring water of sparkling waters. This is the best. Irish Open is the one that you need to win. However, I come from an era of competition where competing as a blue belt, there were smaller numbers of tournaments all around the country. So you would be going to England for tournaments as well. But the main factor is that there were no round robin tournaments. What I mean by that is there weren't guaranteed multiple match tournaments. When I was a white belt, they were ran in gyms. They were called informed performance tournaments. And my first two tournaments were round robins. I got loads of experience, loads of matches. That helped me a lot. But all the ones that were held in halls were single elimination knockout tournaments where you would go, you'd put the money down, you could lose your first match and that's you done. Now, the tournaments that are held in halls, the Grappling Industries, in some cases the Empires, in some cases the Grapple Kings Opens, the different stuff like that, for the same price, if not significantly cheaper than the Irish Open, you could have someone who can come to a tournament and walk away with a minimum of 8 matches on the day. And that's spread out over gi and no gi. 4 in the gi, 4 in no gi, more if you make it to the semi-finals, more if you win the whole thing, more if you do an absolute. Okay? So I can see where that is going. I can see where this is going. And it's completely understandable because if you're a mid, like a average weight blue belt, white belt, even purple belt, you can guarantee these matches. I would not be surprised that Grappling Industries, who are holding an event a week after the Irish Open this year, if they had a high registration number, even though it's only a week later. But at the same time, it does come down to what is happening and what's being said within the gyms. I know personally we're pushing for the Irish Open this year, trying to get as many people involved. But rightfully so, the other side of the same coin that we were talking about earlier on, I am aware of many people who are boycotting the Irish Open this year because of some of the insane attitudes from people involved when stuff has been highlighted over the last year or two, made aware of these things, stuff dismissed. Like, both of these things are allowed to happen. It's a free market. It's a capitalist market. You can decide with your feet, decide with your money, go and do Grappling Industries if you want, or go and do the Irish Open if you want. But I can understand why people will want to do a round robin tournament and win that in a bigger division than doing the Irish Open and potentially lose first round both gi and no gi and then be out €140 or whatever it is for the combined registration fee. But let's just loop back to that question for a little second. We had the IBJJF and other tournaments happening all throughout the year. I think that there is generally oversaturation as well, which is great for lower belts and getting competition experience. Don't get me wrong. But when it comes down to it, maybe the Irish Open is not as high up on people's priorities as gaining competition experiences. And I hope that that's not the case, because the Irish Open should have the most amount of people registered at it. It should be the biggest divisions. It should be the hardest one to win. It should mean the most for that reason as well. There's a reason why I have two of them hanging on my, on the handles there on my social media guy. Get the medals there. Good lad. That's why he's been paid the big bucks. I actually don't think, are they the Irish Open medals? One of them's there, but thanks very much for that shot. Now, maybe we need a couple of different things from the promotion or the organization or how they're advertising it. Maybe something that I heard recently. Maybe we need a couple more Instagram posts using photographers' photos without permission or payment for having used them to advertise an event. Maybe we need a few more bits of that going on. You know, just, this is on the internet. I can use that without asking the person who took it. Here we go. Promote my business or service. Wouldn't happen in many other areas, but maybe some more facts about Helio Gracie could do the trick in trying to get people registered earlier as well. But the, like, first of all, the logistical nightmare of running these tournaments must be absolutely mental. So, as I say, I know I'm having a wee bit of a, jab there, you know, like that jab. I'm having a wee bit of a jab, but it's in jest. Do you know what I mean? Take the photographer's pictures. The photographer in question, he's grand. Doesn't matter. Just take his pictures. It doesn't. Who cares? He's a moaner. I know him personally. He's a moaner. But the reality is, like, fair play to the people who do organise it. It is the biggest tournament for a reason. It is the best organised tournament for a reason. I do think that you will see an avalanche of sign-ups in the next couple of weeks as we get closer to the Irish Open. But unfortunately, as we've previously mentioned, we won't be able to actually see how many people are signing up or tell you how many people are signing up unless I sit here and literally scroll down through the entire list, which I don't have a lot going on in my life. Don't think I'm not above doing that. I would do that for the listeners. I would sit here and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and go through every division to see how many people have I actually signed up one by one, counting the number of paid registrations. It is kind of annoying that it was taken away from that perspective, but I'm sure it was for a very good reason. And then finally, IBJJF Dublin was last week. Thought it was great. A lot of people going mental on day one at the venue. The online system was not refreshing, so it was still like 11:30 or 12 o'clock in the day and the matches hadn't moved on from 9:30. That was quite annoying because you couldn't see if it was running early or ahead of schedule. There was no television like screens to show people the order of fights unless you had already checked in and gone into the bullpen. They were calling people out like 1.5 hours ahead of the scheduled time in some cases, or 1 hour ahead of the scheduled time to try get matches together. This is something that we'll talk about in future for people going to IBJJF tournaments and bigger tournaments. But just so you know, the runners who work there on the day operate off a sheet of paper, not off the internet. So if you are Paul versus Jimmy, meant to be competing at 12:15, but the tournament is running quicker, they will only run that match quicker if both of you are in the bullpen checked in at 11:30 and other people aren't checked in. So they'll skip your match forward because they want to be running matches as the day is going on. But here's something that you may not know that is quite useful. They cannot disqualify. This is in their rules. I've seen it happen at the Europeans. I've seen it happen at major tournaments. Maybe international opens, they'll take liberations themselves and say, right, DQ this guy, whatever. They cannot DQ you until I think it is 5 to 15 minutes after the stated time that is on the printed out sheet of paper. So never feel, and I seen this quite a lot last week, never feel obligated to go into the bullpen because somebody who works at one jiu-jitsu tournament a year has been told, call their name out, get them in, we need to keep running. We need to keep this running smooth so we can get home quicker. Smooth comp is different, and I think tournaments have their own different ways of how they DQ people and you need to be here at this time. The IBJJF will advise you to be there a certain amount of time before your match, but they will not disqualify you until minimum 5 minutes after the scheduled time that was agreed that is on the printed out sheets of paper on the day. So that is something to keep in mind for people that are going to be doing IBJJF tournaments in future. And there are a couple of things worth bringing up there, especially on the topic of runners and people who work at tournaments. I've had people ask me before, how do you get hired to work at these events? Empire are very good at that in the north, about asking different gyms if they have people who'd be interested in working, people who train jiu-jitsu but don't want to compete in jiu-jitsu. I think it's essential that the people working at these tournaments, by and large, have some semblance or knowledge of the sport, of what they're watching, that they are aware of the referee's calls and that they're putting it up on the scoreboard at the time when they're meant to be doing it, that they know the sport, that they're carrying on correctly and stuff like that. However, based off stuff with the Irish Open, I personally can't vouch for that. I don't know how they hire people. I don't know who they hire. I don't know if you even can get hired by them. I did a quick check on the frequently asked questions part of their page. It seems like they have nothing up there that says, if you're interested in working with us at this tournament, you can contact us here. The only email there is info@irelandbjj.com. So if you are listening, you don't want to compete, you'd be interested at working at the Irish Open, I'm sure if you sent them an email there, you'd get a very prompt response about if they were interested in hiring you or not. So you could go through that. Anyway, have a great week, everyone. Enjoy Easter tomorrow. Enjoy the eggs. Enjoy the other stuff if you're partaking in that as well for your little silly stoner holiday tomorrow. Enjoy WrestleMania, most importantly. Sit back, listen to some Creed or Limp Bizkit, some of the WWE highlight songs of all time. Hype yourself up and prepare for the realization that John Cena, the champ, is back. He's going to stick one on Cody Rhodes. He's going to walk out of Las Vegas with the final boss, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and whoever else is going to turn on other people as well as to form this new super clique, leave Las Vegas, this WWE champion, and send the entire wrestling world into turmoil. Enjoy your week, and I'll talk to you next weekend. Good luck.